back to the table. We'll get going. Dave Preble, do you want to? It's all yours.
Okay, let's get going then. This is all I got left? Wow.
If we have other conversations, can we take them outside? Thank you.
Okay, folks, my presentation was scheduled to be international fisheries updates, and I'm going to shorten it considerably and bring us up to date on primarily the bluefin tuna situation. It's become rather complex, and doubly complex because the meeting schedule this fall, timing of meetings, was a little bit screwed up compared with in the past. Last year, if you recall, I gave a considerable background on bluefin tuna, so I won't go through all of that again this year. And we took a very firm stand that then was transmitted to the to ICAT or to the American delegation to ICAT for our input on what happened last year. And the input that we had last year did have an effect. This year, it got screwed up because the timing of the meetings didn't jibe anywhere near as well. And the fact is that ICAT's November meeting ended just a couple of days ago, and Rich Ruey is here jet-lagged and exhausted because he had 24 hours on airplanes coming back. And he's here to help us by going over some of the things that happened at the ICAT meeting this year. It was a very interesting, very profound meeting. Some very deep changes have occurred in the management of bluefin tuna. And also, Dave Cottingham from the Office of Sustainable Fisheries is here to give us some information on CITES, how CITES works, some basic background on CITES, because we've got to deal with it not only with this bluefin tuna, but as has been pointed out, we're looking at CITES listings that may affect us, even though it may not be our fish, that may affect us in our market for dogfish. And we know that wolffish isn't going to go away either. So CITES is going to become a fact of life even more than it has been, and we have to know something about it. So I did want Dave Cottingham to give us some background on that. He's the man that does the work on it at the Office of Sustainable Fisheries. Okay.
Let me just correct you. I'm with the Office of Protected Resources.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No worries.
I thought you were under Allen. No? Oh, well, Protected Resources. Okay, the advisory committee to the U.S. section to ICAT met twice this fall, September 17th, 18th, and October 15th to 16th, and those are in both open and closed sessions to begin formulating U.S. positions for the annual full commission meetings, which were held in Brazil last week. The meeting was largely dominated, although bluefin tuna was not on the schedule for this year. Bluefin tuna specs are set every 2 years. It was set last year, which is why we had our input last year. But because of a unique situation, the country of Monaco actually proposed a listing of the Atlantic bluefin tuna under Appendix 1 of CITES, the Convention on International Trade and Endangered Species. And so that actually dominated the conversation, and it was, I must say, it was a very spirited meeting. The New England Council interest is that of the 30 species managed by ICAT, both swordfish and bluefin tuna have supported important fisheries in New England. For tuna alone, bluefin tuna has been up to $32 million, and that's on a fishery that was already depleted, ex-vessel. And there's also a yellowfin tuna fishery, and which is much smaller. But it's been sort of a regular fishery, particularly in the recreational component. And, of course, our traditional swordfish fishery, which was on the schedule this year. So these are the things that we're going to deal with today. And I have given you a packet of stuff, much of which I had intended to go through. There are 12 items in the packet. I'm not going to go through them because I want to pick up time here. One of them, though, I want to call your attention to is number six, which is a NOAA Fisheries Service report on the potential economic effects of a ban on the trade of North Atlantic bluefin tuna on U.S. commercial fishermen. And the other one is a draft that was put together on November 4th of the latest Atlantic bluefin tuna stock assessment results, which is number five. The others are all information on landings and things of that sort, which I'll leave you to look at. I want to get right into bluefin tuna because that's the crux of the issue, and I'm going to peripherally mention swordfish at the end, and I'm hoping Rich can give us some information on that as well. They pretty much did what we wanted them to on swordfish. On bluefin tuna, Western Atlantic bluefin tuna. On the Western Atlantic bluefin tuna, in 2008, we were fishing at the 2,100 metric ton level, and we agreed, and we had input with this last year, we agreed to lower that to 1,800 metric tons, which will go into effect in 2010. Under the 2,100 metric tons, the F over FMSY was 1.27, which is still a little into the overfishing range. Under 1,800, under any possible scenario, we will reach F over FMSY equal 1.27. In other words, we will have brought the mortality in the Western stock to where it needs to be, and at that point it should begin to rebuild, except that there is one big fly in that ointment. If you look at the Eastern stock, the Eastern Atlantic bluefin tuna stock, F over FMSY has been in excess of 3. That's an enormous mortality, and it would not, that the population has been crashing, and it would have already crashed, except that the Mediterranean Sea is highly productive. The gross primary productivity is very high, and it has sustained a rapid energy flux within that population and a high population level, or rather a fecund population. But it is in the process of collapsing at the present time. That's what we're dealing with, and the fact is that with a collapse, with two stocks that as we know, I'm not going to get into this deeply, but we all know that we've got an extensive amount of back and forth traffic between those two stocks, and we can be sure that even if we get to we have already F over FMSY of one or below, that with the Eastern stock at 3.0 or above, that we will not get rebuilt in the West. No matter what we do, we will not get rebuilt. So it's vitally important to us to deal with that Eastern stock situation. And we need to make certain that rebuild continues, because bluefin tuna is an important fishery, particularly to the small boats in New England, and will become a more important fishery if we can get any kind of rebuild of this fishery. I can tell you stories of what it used to be like. Rich can too. And we know that we had a good fishery this fall, but we know that it's a shadow of what it should be, and that the economic yield from this fishery is potentially far higher. What had to be done at ICAT this year, and ICAT couldn't avoid it because of the potential CITES listing, was to reopen the Atlantic bluefin tuna spec setting on the mid-year, which was this year, and make some kind of changes. Otherwise, they would have been facing a probably certain listing under Appendix 1 of CITES. So they did do certain things, and I'd like Rich to go over what those were. There were reductions in the TAC for next year and agreements that are important. And if I tell you, I've got it all listed here, but for me it would be secondhand, and Rich was right there, and I would really appreciate it if he'd go through that with us.
Rich Rouet with the American Bluefin Tuna Association. I wanted to start by thanking the chairman and the council for sending Captain Preble to our ICAT Advisory Committee meetings. I've been asking this council to do that because the other four councils have been participating quite extensively, and it puts us at a disadvantage, particularly with the Gulf and the South Atlantic Fishery Management Council. And Captain Preble has a wealth of knowledge that contributes to this process. That's very helpful and represents New England interest very, very well. And I can't resist just going back for a minute to the prior conversation on dogfish. I just can't resist. But the criticism that some level against Dave Pierce and others for not following the scientific advice. I have to tell you, there are times when frankly, for a lot of us, you wear a badge of honor and courage to go against some of the scientific advice, because sometimes scientific advice is wrong. Captain Preble just pointed out a major example of that. In 1981, we were told, do not worry about mixing. And we wasted 20 years of conservation of bluefin tuna in the Western Atlantic at the cost of, I estimated, at a minimum of $500 million at one point in time, chasing a rebuilding plan that couldn't possibly work. So sometimes it's very important that you challenge scientific advice and you go with your gut if you think you're right. Okay, on the meeting, we had a real historic change. It was announced at the beginning of the meeting. For the first time, we had an all-woman U.S. representation, and it was a real pleasure to work with that. We had Rebecca as the head. We had Margaret Spring, Dr. Lipchenko's chief of staff. We had Randy Thomas from NFI and Ellen Peel from the Billfish Foundation. So it was quite a unique situation. I think we were probably the only delegation that was made up 100% of women leading the show, and it was great. Mike Conathan was also there, and he was a powerhouse for us from Senator Snow's staff. The point of all this is, with Margaret Spring and Mike there, is we had probably the highest level of influence on, from the United States perspective, people who were able to call home when things looked pretty bleak with the European community in terms of getting them to agree with the scientific advice, which, as everybody knows and as the CAP has mentioned, has been the problem before. Again, even with that, we had to wait until Sunday morning, 10 days into the meeting, before the EC came out with their plan for what they were actually going to do. And I guess it was worth the wait, although by Friday night some of us were in panic mode, not knowing what was going on. But they basically, to get to the quick of it, they reduced the TAC from 27,500 metric tons to 13,500 metric tons, which is well within the scientific advice. The scientific advice was between 8,500 metric tons and 15,000 metric tons. In addition to that, they agreed to eliminate the bad weather days. I have a new cell phone that I don't know how to put on vibrate mode. So, I keep dropping my cell phones in the ocean and have to get new ones. But anyways, they eliminated the loophole of the 5 weather days on their closure, so their purse seine fishery is now restricted to a 1-month fishery, May 15th to June 15th. It's prohibited 11 months out of the year, which is a capacity control to back up the quota to make sure that there's compliance with it, which all of the countries had to do in order to comply with a prior year. In order to comply with a prior year, I got to read the manual before I know how to handle it. The second thing the community agreed to, which is quite significant as well, is in 2011 they agreed that they would further lower their TAC to a level which is undetermined right now, but to a level that will provide a 60% probability of achieving BMSY by 2023. And that is pretty remarkable. Most scientists, or the back of the envelope calculations, suggest that that's going to be anywhere from 0 to 8,000 metric tons. They're going to have to reduce further to that level in order to achieve that goal, which they've committed to in writing. It's part of the agreement. So we really think we've gotten the East under control in a major way. And we also got confirmation at the meeting, which was stunning, that the progress the community had made. If you've been following the picture, the biggest problem is the European community has failed to institute, implement the infrastructure to both monitor, control, and shut the fishery down when they reach quota. And they did. I've been a big basher. I can't, you know, I'm not in second place in bashing the European community for doing what's wrong on bluefin tuna. But I have to give them credit. They provided documented evidence of number of observations, number of observers, number of violations, number of 4,000 euro fines that they implemented. They forced four traps into releasing fish. They showed a video of a Maltese trap releasing 200 metric tons of bluefin tuna after they had fed those fish for 9 months. At considerable cost to the industry, they proved to the industry that you're going to comply or it's going to cost you in a big way. So the point of that is things have really changed in the Mediterranean, and it by all appearances it appears to be real, and I don't think it's reversible, particularly with a compliance picture. So anyways, that was major league progress that we saw all along. A minor point is that, you know, there's recognition that the United States has been following the scientific advice, as flawed as sometimes it has been, and we're going down to 1,800 metric tons in 2010, at which point we will no longer technically be overfishing the resource, and we're on a track to rebuild under the low recruitment scenario by 2017, under the high recruitment scenario by 2019 at that quota level. So we're already following it. If the EC goes to 60% probability in 2011, we may have to make an adjustment to the Western quota to match what they're doing, because we're not at 60% right now. We're somewhat below 50% in terms of achieving BMSY by that point in time. Another point I wanted to make, a quick point, was many of you know Dr. Chris Rogers. He works for Rebecca Lent in International. And over the last two or three years, he has implemented, at great personal sacrifice and tremendous hard work, a really professional, systematic way of reviewing compliance with ICAT measures that starts with the Secretariat actually developing a table, and quite a long table. I actually have it here, but I'm not going to. I got to speed things up. I know we're very late on the time frame here. But anyways, and he ploddingly walked through the whatever number of 30 countries that are involved in the eastern bluefin tuna fishery, and actually took the bold move of, as the chairman, pointing out what he thought the penalty should be for the violation that was cited. And it was kind of a it was a brand new thing, and it was an initial pushback by several nations, very strong pushback. But Chris persevered, and by the end of the meeting, you had people like, for example, China, who initially rejected the fact that they were going to be identified. We've never, you know, one of the major criticisms of ICAT is that it's a, you know, you don't penalize your member nations, you only penalize non-member nations. Well, this year we penalized member nations. We started the process of penalizing member nations by agreeing to identify specific non-compliance with a letter coming from ICAT to that country saying, you've been identified in violation. Tell us how you're going to fix this problem, and tell us how you're going to fix it at the next annual meeting. And that's a radical departure. And China, for example, resisted at first, and then once the European community accepted identification, and several of the other countries accepted identification, the delegate from China took the floor back and accepted it and said, you know, I'm sorry, and we'll fix the problem. And I didn't want to agree to the ID because I thought I might get fired when I get back home. But since everybody else is accepting the identification, I'll take the identification as well. So just major league progress in that process. So that's all the good news. The bad news is that you know, the ENGOs, particularly Pew, is still hot on our trail. I think they smell blood in the water. just to give you an idea of the effort. Everybody probably knows the big campaign they have going on, multi-million-dollar campaign going on again. We were greeted in Recife, Brazil, with they bought the International Herald Tribune front four pages on 2 days in a row, front and back covers, and used to be $90,000 a page. I don't know what it is today, but all to try to bring pressure on day one on bluefin tuna and on day two on sharks. Didn't travel well, so it's a little bit ruffled up. But and the CITES thing, we view, you know, it's a threat. We don't know where the United States is going to come out on it. We've got a December 2nd public hearing that ABTA will have representation at, trying to put forward some of the facts of how we think ICAT is the proper agency to be managing bluefin, and how CITES could actually be counterproductive indeed if several nations take reservations, for example, and keep the Japanese market open. It's going to encourage other countries like Libya and Turkey in particular to also take a reservation and just simply keep the trade going and ignore it. Japan on seven occasions has taken reservations. There's a lot of countries that do not want CITES involved in fish. Iceland is right up at the top of that list of a country that would probably take a reservation, not because they have any bluefin right now, but because they do not want CITES involved in fish. Don't believe it's a competent authority to deal with it, that it really needs to be relegated to the RFMOs. In prior conversations with Captain Preble, we're asking, I guess, for the council help, and I'll leave it to him to go through the details of that. But we'd like to have council help in trying to build the case that we're doing the job, ICAT's doing the job, U.S. fishermen are doing the job, and major league progress. The threat of CITES has helped enormously. It's undeniable. We can give credit to World Wildlife Fund and everybody who's participated in exposing what's been going on in the Mediterranean Sea for many years now. You know, it was WWF that came up with the estimate of 61,000 metric tons being caught in the Mediterranean. It was endorsed by SCRS, but now even SCRS acknowledges that they're below the TAC. They probably caught about 19,000 metric tons, and we actually think here in New England we're already seeing the benefit of that. Dr. John Graves from VIMS and one of his graduate students just put out a recent paper that shows we get upwards of the range can be from 30% to 83% of the small fish that are caught from the Virginia Capes through New York can be of Mediterranean origin. And it's always been known that the Mediterranean stock, as Nancy, I'm sure, can attest to, the Mediterranean biomass is 5 to 10 times larger than the Western Atlantic stock. So we've always been dependent upon this mixing, which was ignored in the 70s, and obviously with the two-stock hypothesis in 81, it cemented that notion that you could just simply ignore mixing and do it on your own. And it's clear you can't do it on your own. The Caps made the point a couple of times already that there's general acknowledgement that the West can't rebuild without the East, and that's why we have a stake in the say of what's going on in the East. So I probably exceeded more time than I probably should have, but I can also at some point talk about swordfish and some of the other species when you're ready.
Yeah, I think to cap it up, the important things that happened, first of all, was reopening the Atlantic bluefin tuna this year anyway, and I think we can credit the Monaco proposal with that. It really put ICAT under pressure. But ICAT had seen this coming for a while. We've seen the beginnings of movement for the last couple of years, and that just brought it all to a head. But there were certain key things that were involved. One was the Chris Rogers has chaired the compliance committee now for 2 years, and he's been absolutely wonderful. He's done a better job than I think anybody could ever have expected anybody to do. He seems to be the perfect one for the job. And the getting the formal identifications and the acceptances by the nations was a major breakthrough in bluefin tuna. The second thing was getting the 2010 TAC, which had already been set at 27,000 tons, to get it reduced to 13,500. There is some thought among some people that they would have liked to have seen it go lower, but there is a logistical problem here. You have a fishery that's being in progress, and you have a lot of ships involved, a lot of countries involved, and it just logistically it wouldn't work. You couldn't get it down in that period of time without having massive disruptions in the European fisheries. But they did drop it to 13,500. That's more than I thought they would do. And they agreed in 2011 and from that point at least through 2013 in that two-year spec setting that it would be science-based with a 60% probability of a rebuild by 2023, which I think is an interesting number because I talked to the SCRS scientists this last fall, and they said that we should be aiming toward a one-generation time or 20-year rebuild, and they've agreed to rebuild by 2023. I think that's remarkable. The spawning closures, we know that there's really two things that are essential to recovering the bluefin tuna. One is to set the tack within the advice of the SCRS, and the other one is time area closures. There are about a dozen things that you can do for compliance, but none of them are enforceable. Time area closures are enforceable. I think that those are the two keys, and they address both of them. And the other thing is, Rich mentioned the new process for providing scientific advice. That was a U.S. proposal that was accepted by ICAT. So we made major advances this year, and I would like to see us continue it. And to do that, what I'm proposing, I had a series of motions, but this just made a lot of them irrelevant, what actually happened. But there are two things that I would like to see the council endorse. One is to send a letter to Dr. Luchenko commending Chris Rogers for a superb job as chairman of the Compliance Committee. And the second one is I would like to also have the council send a letter to Dr. Luchenko with copies to Rebecca Lent saying that with bluefin tuna, we would like to have the U.S. quota share maintained on western bluefin tuna. And that from 2011 and beyond, we agree that science-based management to achieve rebuild of all Atlantic bluefin by 2023, that we endorse that, and that we endorse time area closures in the Mediterranean, particularly during the spawning months of May, June, and July. And then the key one that I really would like to see, that it's really a new approach that hasn't been used, I brought this up at the meetings this fall, is to have the U.S. endorse the position that bluefin tuna mortality, wherever the fish swims, Atlantic bluefin tuna mortality should be at or below F over FMSY equals 1. I'm sorry, let me restate that. F over FMSY should be at or below 1.0 in all stocks at all times. And I'd like to see us endorse that position. There's also a couple of things on swordfish that we didn't bring up. But let's go with the tuna first of all. Do I need a motion, John, or is that something we can do by agreement here?
Does anyone object to that? All set.
All set. Okay. Then I want to move on quickly to the swordfish. Swordfish. It looks like we pretty much cleaned house on that one as well. So I'll let you go with that. Rich knows a whole lot more about the swordfishery
okay.
than I do.
Well, it wasn't quite as it was a victory for us. The United States went into the meeting with two primary objectives. One was to make sure we retained our quota share, which we did 100%. And the second one was try to get the TAC down to 13,500 from 14,000 metric tons to install a more precautionary approach. Swordfish, as you all know, is a huge success story. It's one that NOAA is bragging about and everybody's bragging about. We're now at 1.05 BMSY. We're over-rebuilt, and it's largely because the United States continues to leave about 1,300 metric tons of fish in the water every year because of excessive closures, which we're trying to work on. But we didn't win that battle. The quota was dropped from 14,000 metric tons to 13,700 metric tons at the insistence
a lot of other countries that just didn't want to go as low as we wanted to go. We had the flexibility to be able to go. Industry was pushing real hard for the 13,500 because it would expose less undercut quota to being taken away from us. The smaller the quota was, so it was self-serving, but also was good for the resource. So we had no problem doing that. The other objective we had was to make sure, as I mentioned, that we didn't lose any quota share, but also didn't lose any fish, period, to Canada. Because when we lose fish to Canada on swordfish, it all gets dumped on the U.S. market with no bottom price during the months of July, August, and September, and we just can't compete. Our Grand Banks boats, for example, which is the peak of their season, can't compete with the Canadian boats because they're so close to home and we're so far away. And, you know, it's 1,200 miles from Portland, Maine or New Bedford to get up to the Grand Banks, where they have a 200-mile steam to get out to the southern tip of the Grand Banks. Rebecca, who I hope in that letter, by the way, Cap, that in addition to applauding Chris Rogers, that Rebecca gets a nod of appreciation, because she was astounding on the chair. As strong as we've had a commissioner speaking on our behalf, she was just very strong. But what happened was, when she kept repeatedly saying no, 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 no to the Canadians, which was her instructions from the U.S. ICAT Advisory Committee and everybody else, the Canadians, you know, finally smartened up and looked elsewhere, and they got Senegal through the chairman of Panel 4, Masa Miyahara. They got Japan to put pressure on Senegal to give Canada 100 tons of Senegal underage, which came from the United States 2 years prior, as we started dividing up our underage to allow developing countries to enter the fishery. So it's actually a U.S. quota that's still coming back to bite us, but it's coming back through a third party. It's happened on bluefin in the past. It's just a big political shell game that goes on. So the Canadian quota is going up 100 metric tons, while the rest of us are coming down a little bit to meet the 13.5 total number. So the Canadians will have more fish on our market, and our industry will suffer from that as a result. So it's a little bit of mixed blessing, but the good news is the quota's coming down a little bit. It's a little bit more of a precautionary approach, and we're going to take a little hit, maybe more than a little hit, economically.
Okay. The load at the 13.7. I just wanted to check and make sure what I've got here is right. 13.7 was what I was told was 50% assurance of maintaining the BMSY, or is that not the right number?
I think it's actually higher than that. I think it's 75%.
Okay.
No, I don't see it right here in my
notes.
I'm pretty sure it's higher than 50%.
Okay. So at any rate, the quota was lowered to a more precautionary level, and we extended the allocation arrangement, although, as Rich pointed out, the Canadians kind of pulled a fast one there. Rebecca Lent did hold on tough with the Canadians. One of the things that happened at the closed sessions of the meetings this last fall was that we did give Rebecca an earful on dealing with the Canadians. I won't take it any further than that, but that's what happened. And she was very tough, very good. I would like to see a letter also to Dr. Lipchenko commending Rebecca's work at the at ICAT, because obviously she was ahead of the delegation, and we made the greatest inroads in ICAT that in the history of ICAT, actually. So it's been a complete turnaround. She did a magnificent job. And I think we also should add to that letter that with the northern swordfish, that we encourage tax to continue to be set by the science and continue maintaining the U.S. quota share. There's another issue that I wanted to ask Rich about, and that's the minimum size, the 125-centimeter minimum size. Was that brought up at all at ICAT? Okay. That was one of the things that was on the list, but there's been some question about excessive catch of fish under 125 centimeters. I just wondered if it had come up. I'm not done. There's one more big issue. Okay. The last issue is that in the letter to Dr. Lubchenco, we also absolutely necessary that the New England Council adopt a position on the CITES listing, the potential CITES listing for Atlantic bluefin tuna. The point that came up over and over at the meetings this fall was that CITES makes an excellent bludgeon, and it turned out to make a very excellent bludgeon, but CITES doesn't manage fish. And the management still has to be done by ICAT. So it's a question of where we want to go with this CITES listing. And I think before we make that kind of decision, we need some background on how CITES works. And for that, we have David Cottingham from Washington. And, Rich, I thank you. Oh, by the way, I love the honorific, but I've been out of the business for a while, and I'm not a captain anymore. But I thank you very much for that anyway.
Okay, I'll try to get through this quickly because I know everybody's ready to get out of here. It's a topic that people can talk about a lot. There's a lot of misconceptions out there about what CITES is. I'm one of the CITES guys, okay? I don't do ICAT. I don't usually go to fishery management councils. They speak an entirely different language. They look at things entirely differently. They look at stock depletions, not FMSY and that sort of thing. That's what CITES is all about. It's the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species. But it's not only endangered species. It's to deal with all stocks of all sorts of things, plants and animals. The complete title is actually of flora and fauna as well. So it's to deal with areas where exploitation is affecting those stocks. It has everything from frogs and toads and turtles, and it's amazing the number of things that it deals with, ginseng, bears, a lot of things like that. So I'm going to run through this very quickly because of the 175 members, meets about every 2 years. You can see from the map there are only a very few countries that aren't. Fish and Wildlife Service is the lead agency. The goal is to regulate trade. They do not manage individual stocks or species. This is a common misnomer. And Rich just said, CITES doesn't manage fisheries. CITES has no expertise to manage fisheries. That's not what it was set up to do. It looks to countries or international organizations to manage those resources. Appendix 1, species threatened with extinction under CITES, international commercial trade is prohibited. It's sort of like endangered. Appendix 2 is sort of like threatened, but not real. It has some parallels, but it's not completely like that. Species that are vulnerable to over-exploitation, but not necessarily at risk of extinction. International trade and harvest on high seas is permitted and tracked. And there are permit requirements that you can go through. A couple of key timelines here. The proposals had to be submitted in October. Fish and Wildlife Service has a very elaborate procedure that they started a year ago where we solicit people's ideas. The ICAP meeting was just held. We have a public meeting on the CITES. So as of October the 15th or 20th, we knew what all the different countries were proposing. And you can actually go to the CITES website and download all of the proposals that were submitted. We are now reviewing all of those proposals and to decide what our positions will be as we get ready for the meeting that will take place in Doha in March. The United States proposed to list 6 species of sharks, and Palau was one of our co-sponsored that with us. There are 3 species of hammerheads and then dusky sandbar and oceanic white tips. Those are primarily in fin trade, and that again would be Appendix 2. We have proposed to list red corals, which are very valuable in the jewelry trade, and they come both from Mediterranean corallium, and there's some pink corals in the Pacific that are very difficult to tell apart. So we have actually proposed to list the family Corallidae. And the European Union co-sponsored that with us. Some proposals from other countries. Monaco, as you've heard, is a proposal list on Appendix 1. There's a I get this question a lot about domestic trade is permitted on harvested within a nation's EEZ. That would be true in the United States. It's my understanding that the European Union has a slightly more restrictive policy that prohibits trade within their boundaries of trade of things that are harvested within their area. Now, I am told that they have, on rare occasions, had exceptions to that. So at the ICAP meeting, some of the EU people were saying that, well, if it's listed on Appendix 1, if bluefin is listed on Appendix 1, we could still trade it. That would be a most unusual thing to happen. Spiny dogfish, Sweden, on behalf of the European Union, has proposed to list both spiny dogfish and poor beagle sharks on Appendix 2, and Palau co-sponsored that. The U.S., as I said, we're developing these positions. We've got a public meeting in 2 weeks. There are a couple of myths here. Marine species listed in CITES Appendix 1 cannot be sold domestically within the United States. That's a myth. They could be. The recreationally caught fish could not be sold anyway, supposedly. Marine fish listed in CITES Appendix 1 cannot be harvested recreationally. That's not true. They could be harvested recreationally because those fish aren't supposed to be sold anyway. The Monaco proposal would ban all trade of all tunas. That's not true. This is to list bluefin, North Atlantic bluefin tuna only. It would not affect southern bluefin or others. Trade of bluefin within EU markets would not be affected. I've already covered that one. Misconception. CITES Appendix 2 is a ban on trade. That's not. I talked a little bit about that when I was talking about dogfish earlier. It requires certification that the product was harvested legally and that it was harvested sustainably. It's actually designed to support sustainable trade, international trade. CITES Appendix 2 is a list of species that are prohibited in international trade. That goes back to what I just said up there. And I got through that in about 4 minutes. So I'm happy to take questions.
Thanks, David. Questions for Dave? Dr. Pierce?
You mentioned in your presentation look-alike species. I think that last time around, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service did move forward to support the listing in Appendix 2 because of look-alike considerations, spiny dogfish around the world, other stocks, West Coast dogfish, maybe European dogfish. I think that was the reason why they supported it. Is there any reason for us to believe that the Fish and Wildlife Service won't do it again, that is, support the listing because of dogfish from the western, from our region looking like dogfish on the West Coast, for example?
I don't think that's correct. I think your presumption is wrong. They supported it because the Europeans have knocked hell out of their stocks, and there's been serial depletion of one stock of dogfish after another. It started in Europe, and they were moving through Monaco and down through Africa and those. And so it was the international trade that was affecting stocks. And CITES does not get into the stock delineation nearly to the extent that fishery managers do. We talked about a split listing perhaps for bluefin, and it wouldn't work. So it wasn't so much the look-alike. It was the fact that it was serial depletion of one stock after another. And that was leading it to that. And so the Europeans, there were a lot of reasons. I mean, there was a huge debate even within the U.S. delegation on that, but it didn't really have so much to do with lookalikes.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. Is there any reason for us to be concerned that because this has some political bent to it, that we might support listing of dogfish if in exchange for support from other nations for us to polar bears? You've heard this discussion, correct? Trade-offs. In other words, this is a political behind-the-scenes dealing in order to support or not support a listing. Is that a myth?
I would never say it's a myth. any more than you guys make deals. I mean, we try very hard not to to trade votes or things like that at CITES. There are things that we do that the United States goes in and we look at the status of the stocks and individual stocks. And the Dogfish proposal actually identifies multiple stocks in the Northeast Atlantic and Northwest Atlantic, and, you know, it goes through. And there's no doubt there are millions of Dogfish out there, hundreds of millions of Dogfish out there. But it's also the case that the European Union has not accepted the recommendations of their IC's scientific meetings, advice, their scientific advisors, to greatly reduce the stocks of dogfish. And the dogfish populations over there are in trouble. And so the United States, that was one of the harder ones that we had to grapple with at the last meeting, and I'm sure we'll continue to grapple with it all the way. But I don't think that we will get into a situation where you give us your vote on X and we'll give you our vote on Y. That really doesn't happen that much there.
Anyone else on the council? Dave?
Yeah, the question Dr. Pierce brought up with the look-alike species. It was my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong here, but it was my understanding that if look-alike species are going to be named, that they have to be in the original document. Is that correct?
Actually, we decided to do that with our shark proposal, with the shark fins.
Yeah.
We had better data on smooth hammerheads that are in shark fin trade than we do on scalloped or great. And so what we decided to do was to list smooth hammerheads, because we have better biological information and trade data. And so we then proposed to list the other ones, except oceanic white tips, as lookalikes. But that has to be part of the proposal when it's submitted. One of the general philosophies that we take into CITES is that CITES, as I'll reiterate till I'm blue in the face, CITES is not set up to manage fisheries. But what it is set up to do is to manage the trade, and the United States believes very strongly that where there are either nations or RFMOs or other international agreements that are not effectively conserving things, that CITES trade regulations can offer another valuable tool for management. So that's how we make up our minds on these things as we look to see. We have actually in the past proposed species that weren't even in our waters. There was a fish called the Bengali cardinal fish that's in Indonesia. We thought Indonesia was doing a terrible time with it, so we proposed to list it on Appendix 2. But one of the big examples of where this has worked very well is queen conch. And Nancy's probably had, from when she was in the Southeast, had some experience with queen conch, and it's now a fairly well-managed fishery. So there are some examples of where this has worked, that the trade restrictions have been effective.
And one last question that I had was, there's been a lot of talk about the exceptions, and that's going to have some bearing on what the position this council takes. And it would seem that if a CITES I listing is issued for bluefin tuna, that several nations will declare themselves exceptions. And is that true? How does that work?
Under CITES and almost any international law, a nation state can say that it's like filing an objection under the IWC. It's taking a reservation. So they have the authority to do that.
Yeah, the reason I ask it is because when I was at the NAFO meeting this year, I talked to one of the members of the Japanese delegation, and he said that if bluefin were listed under CITES I, that Japan would immediately take an exception, and that would mean then that international trade could be conducted with Japan. Is that correct or not? In other words,
there's a difference between internet. Japan has such so many fingers in so many pies. You couldn't export it from the United States to Japan or from other CITES member countries. Whether Japan could then somehow buy quota or some, you know, I would never seek to underestimate the creativity of fishermen or fish traders in how to get around things like that. No offense to any present company.
I had a quick question. Has there ever been an example of something going on Appendix 1 and then coming off of it?
Yeah, but I can't think of what it is right now.
It has happened? It has happened, okay. Rich?
I think that's why the Japanese call it CITES jail.
Well, okay, if you want to hold them up as the standard.
Sometimes. One comment and two questions that are sort of related. I was at the CITES meeting in 1992 in Kyoto, and that was prior to the formation of, well, the European community may be in a developing state, but they weren't yet representing Spain and France or anybody else. So between Spain and France in particular, and Japan, there were an awful lot of fishery development grants that took place in some of the African countries and South American countries to make sure that the vote went the right way. So it's a very political thing. There is no question, ICAT is clear, ICAT SCRS special meeting extended, that we meet the criteria from the perspective of historical decline for a listing of both eastern and western bluefin. What that leaves out is, I don't remember if Dave mentioned it, but the criteria does not include projections. You specifically you can't look at projections, and the projections for the Western Atlantic is where we've stopped overfishing and we're on a rebuilding target, and what the East has done is put you in the same situation where we are getting to a rebuilding thing. But unfortunately, according to the CITES criteria, as I understand it and have read it, doesn't count. Well, my questions are, I think you mentioned there are two ports that are certified for, so under an Appendix 1 and an Appendix 2 listing, all of the exports of bluefin tuna would have to go through one or the other of those two ports where there are CITES inspectors, I gather, to slap a label on the box, inspect the box, and then slap a label on it?
Yeah, I don't think I did mention that. Okay. I mean, I didn't go into it. It would have to go through a port where the Fish and Wildlife Service inspectors are. I've got a list of them somewhere, but I think that's mostly the big airports and big ports.
It's more than two.
Yeah.
Okay. But I thought we were led to believe that there were only two ports that...
On the whole East Coast?
Right.
I don't think that's right.
Okay.
I will get that information for you for the record.
Okay. Very important, because we have bluefin taking off from several different ports along the eastern seaboard for Japan. The other thing that is really puzzling is, and the answer that I've been given is on this lookalike that Dave raises as well. The answer comes back, well, Monaco didn't propose any lookalike species, so therefore you have no worry that any other tuna can be included and ultimately included in the CITES listing, which is, to me, just almost inconceivable. We have dealers with 20 years' experience who'll tell you they can't tell the difference between a bluefin tuna and a big eye without putting their hand in the belly cavity and feeling around for the nuances between the two species. And we've got Pacific bluefin, not southern bluefin tuna, but Pacific bluefin, all that travel through the United States, and Pacific big eye that travels through the United States and makes its way to the Japanese market. How are these inspectors supposed to be able to make this determination, whether it's all you have to do is label it big eye, and if there is no lookalike clause, not that I'm trying to raise this issue so you'll include it, but at the same time, it's a glaring opening.
We have to do that. The CITES inspectors have to do that with a lot of things, and I mean that will come up with they'll delay the implementation by 18 months, come up with DNA tests or something like that, which again delays it.
I'm not saying it's easy. It will be, but if there's, if so what you're saying is that people will start selling bluefin as big eye. Because that's what you'd have to do, because you wouldn't, if it were listed, you wouldn't be able to have international trade in bluefin. And let me correct you on another point. The CITES criteria allowed for population declines to be projected or inferred. So there are opportunities for projections in there. I'll pull the criteria out. I got them in my briefcase here, my background.
If I may follow up, Mr. Chairman. We've talked extensively with Dr. John Graves, who's one of the world-renowned geneticists, and there is no current, if you will, pregnancy-type test on the site where you could, you know, poke it and do it. What it would require is taking a sample of the fish, shipping it to a lab, and a 24-hour test before it would do it. And this is the fallacy that a lot of our guys are going to be pointing out very strongly at your public hearing on December 2nd with the NIMS analysis that suggests that a listing of bluefin under CITES is not, even in Appendix 2, is not going to help us, because this is a very perishable product and timing is critical. You can't, you know, have it in a box sitting in a freight forwarding place, you know, snipping a snippet off a finlet and sending it down to Charleston or wherever else and waiting for the mail, and if, you know, to come back and say, okay, yeah, it's really a big eye, for example, or whatever. It would just ruin the trade. The delay in determining the species composition would, in and of itself, ruin the export trade if it were allowed under Appendix 2. Thank you.
Anything further? Mark.
Does Monaco or anyone else feel there's sufficient justification to have bluefin tuna classified as threatened with extinction versus simply overfished?
I don't know the answer to that.
Well, I'm just wondering whether they really believe it can be classified as under Appendix 1 versus Appendix 2.
Yeah, I think there are a fair number of people who think that at the kind of fishing that has been going on bluefin tuna, it should be endangered. There are a lot of people who think that and have written that and published that in scientific articles in the peer-reviewed press. And they're quoted in the Monaco proposal. They're cited.
Dave Preble.
Yeah, the Monaco did not reveal anything of that sort. What they played it, whether they were using it as a bludgeon against ICAT or not, they didn't tell anybody. It certainly seemed, the nature of their proposal seemed to be very deadly serious. There was some question about them not putting in any lookalike species, and you know, maybe it wasn't all that serious, but that's all very off the wall speculation. Monaco's proposal had to be taken as a serious proposal.
Anything further? Ralph?
Thank you. This question's for David. Dave, when there is a CITES II listing and you're going ahead with international trade, you said the management of the species comes back to the country. Would that management be under NOAA or Fish and Wildlife?
Fish and Wildlife Service makes the non-detriment finding. So what the discussion you were just having about dogfish, where you guys say one thing and Mid-Atlantic says another and, you know, Atlantic State says another. I would really hope you guys could clear that up, because were dogfish to be listed before a product could be exported, the Fish and Wildlife Service would have to make a non-detriment finding. And if you have different organizations saying different things, you could have problems convincing the Fish and Wildlife Service that it was, in fact, being harvested sustainably. And that's a Fish and Wildlife Service call for a CITES-listed species.
All right, just to further the question then. So if ICAT set the U.S. quota, and just for example, let's say the U.S. share was going to be 600 tons set by ICAT, based on SCRS science, that number comes back to Fish and Wildlife, who has a division of scientific management that would evaluate that and maybe receive input from other organizations and could readjust that quota lower if they chose to?
Well, for an Appendix 1 listing, it wouldn't make any difference. For Appendix 2, Fish and Wildlife Service is the agency charged with making a no detriment finding. So in a hypothetical, they're the ones who are charged with making that decision.
Mm-hmm.
So
they determine whether it's
non-detrimental.
It's sustainable. In other words,
they're going to give great deference to the fishery managers when the fishery managers agree.
Which fishery managers? Bluefin, I mean, we've got a lot of associations. We have a lot of NGOs. We have ICAT, SCRS. In this case, you're being pulled from a lot of different directions, and I'm just concerned.
But there's not an Appendix 2 proposal for ICAT species. So that's a hypothetical that is not going to happen this time around. I won't say it might not happen in the future, but it's not going to happen this time around.
Okay, thank you.
Steve.
I'm going to see you. I know. I got a 7 o'clock plane. I had a 6 o'clock plane out of Providence, but I do have a 7 o'clock, and that's the last one back, so I would like to be on that one.
My name is Steve Weiner. Just one question. If Japan, for instance, took a reservation, which is an exception on a CITES 1 listing, and so did Libya, so did any other country in the world, then those countries could all trade with Japan. Is that a correct statement, or...?
In other words,
they could do business with Japan.
It's my understanding that that's correct. We have not taken reservations on things like that on any CITES listings that I'm aware of, so we have not had to deal with that. But if two countries took reservations, my understanding is they could continue to harvest. They continue to have trade.
And is it fair to assume probably that the U.S. would not take a reservation? On bluefin tuna?
I'd be very surprised, but who knows?
And I guess so. Once again, the one group of fishermen in the world that have followed the science and sacrificed for years would be not in the game. And other countries who are the countries that put us in this mess conceivably could still be trading with each other.
You know, I've resisted this. Okay. The Western stock is in worse shape than the Eastern stock. It's at about 18% of their pre-harvest biomass. And we keep saying we're doing such a great job because we're fishing the science. And I'm not sure the facts back that up, folks. We're down to about 18%. We put in a rebuilding plan, and the stocks continued to decline for 10 years. So, you know, we keep saying that we're going to have this rebuilding plan, but the facts aren't backing that up, Steve.
Well, as I understand it, the science does back it up. I mean, and as I also understand it, we have no hope of ever rebuilding our Western stock unless the Eastern stock is under control.
Because it's such a small proportion of it.
Right.
Yeah. But we had great debates internally about this. But everybody keeps saying, oh, it's the East, it's the East. The Western stock is down around, 16 to 18% of the pre-exploitation biomass?
I don't know. I was one of the guys that was fishing back then.
So, I know. So,
yeah. How old I am.
So, I mean, you know, we've hit this stock pretty hard, as you know. Oh, well, the Japanese did. Okay, whoever did. But
We could go through a litany of why the West is in trouble, but it isn't us. We aren't even catching our quota, alone.
I know. But there seems to be this impression that, we're doing everything hunky-dory, and I'm not sure that everybody agrees with that.
Well, I think you're wrong. I think people in this country do agree with that. I think why the West is in the trouble it is not because of Western fishermen. And CITES, all it does is lead to potentially countries continuing to barter with one another, and we're on the sidelines. And nothing's been done to solve the problem. It's not the solution. It is a fisheries management tool. You're playing with words. It affects the management of the fishery. It affects the flow of fish. And if bluefin tuna is listed, it's the beginning of probably many species being talked about.
If they're not managed correctly, then maybe they ought to be.
Like codfish. Codfish could be next. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Cottingham has a flight to catch. We have to let him go. I really appreciate David Cottingham. I appreciate you coming up here and doing this. And I know exactly what Rich is going to say, and we can't get that started right
now.
You have a flight to make. So,
Rich and I'll have that conversation offline.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I probably shouldn't have said it, but.
Okay, I have one very fast question for you, and then I know you have to be out of here. January 4th deadline.
Yeah.
Okay, that letter goes where?
Fish and Wildlife Service.
I'm sorry?
The Fish and Wildlife Service. It's in the Federal Register.
Yeah, okay.
I think it goes to Roddy Gable or Rosemary Nam.
Okay.
And there's probably an email place that you can send it to. And that's part of the package.
Okay. Then thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Cottingham, for coming up here. I'm sorry you had to miss your 6 o'clock plane. But
well, that's okay. As long as I can get home tonight, my wife won't shoot me.
Yeah, you're going to be tight right now.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you
for having us. And if you guys want us to come back and you don't, if you put us on the schedule and get us in there, we'll come back and be happy to talk about this and explain it more. I don't know when your next meeting is, but I'll be happy to do that.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, I want to sum up really quickly so that we can finish this up. What we basically are looking for here is 4 letters, and one would be the letter commending Chris Rogers, which would go to Dr. Lubchenco, and another one commending Rebecca Lent and the U.S. delegation also going to Lubchenco for the absolutely magnificent work they did this year. And we then would like to send a letter to Dr. Lubchenco and with copies to Rebecca Lent requesting maintenance of the U.S. quota share of the Western Bluefin Tuna, science-based management for 2011 and beyond that is geared to achieve rebuild of all Atlantic Bluefin Tuna stocks by 2023, and supporting time area closures in the Mediterranean during the spawning months for Atlantic Bluefin Tuna of May, June, July, mortality of equal to or less than BMSY of 1.0 for all stocks of Atlantic bluefin tuna, and northern swordfish tax to be set by the science, and maintenance of a continuance of U.S. quota share. The last thing that has to go in that letter is what we want to do with the CITES listing, and that's that I'm throwing out to the council. I mean, is it an issue, or can we just do that the way we've done the others?
You're suggesting we include in the letter not to support a CITES list.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. Is that okay with everybody?
Is there objection?
Okay. Then that would also be a part of it, and I guess that's it. I mentioned a letter to Fish and Wildlife Service as well, 4 letters.
Right. And I'm going to circle back with you and
wanted to put it out so everybody heard it. I know we got to get
together. Get the details from you, Dave.
Okay, yeah, that's it then. Thank you.
Okay. We're on to the last agenda item, which is other business. Any other business before the council? Their 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 business before the council. 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 Their business.